and foremost, congratulations on the first ACCA of the Where's Jeff podcast romping home last week. We had to wait until the last game of the weekend for Charlie's selection, but there was never really in any doubt that game, Chaz, was it? Boys, what a start to the ACCA.
Yeah, no, but you touched on it before last week, Tiz, when we were talking about it, that Brighton play some nice stuff, but they don't always score goals and they don't look dangerous enough. And I just think that Potter, and we touched again on it last week, has really improved the belief in this team that there is goals in there. Trossard, we know, is a good player. Mopey doesn't score enough goals. But I thought it was convincing. I was sitting with a big cigar at 2-0 thinking, pressure on the boys now. It was sweet as a nut, wasn't it?
There was no pressure on the Chelsea result. Obviously, that was my prediction. And clearly, once Lukaku has shown to be in the mood, there was only going to be one winner. Completely bullied that Arsenal defence the whole game, don't you think, Tomo?
Absolutely, pal. And sorry about this, Charlie, that we have to go on. It's the Arsenal day today again, talking about your team. But Charlie, they just rolled over again. I know everybody tried to make an excuse, but Lukaku does look the real deal, which is frightening. We're playing Chelsea this week, which we'll discuss. But I thought Chelsea looked very good. But guys, as you say, the ACCA was absolutely top class. And what does it tell us? It's Stelling and Mason. Numpties, both of them. Numpties.
Oh my goodness. The amount of money we wasted on those ACCAs due to them two, honestly. we're probably being credit, not working for them lot.
Well, I can't always guarantee, although it was always me who was putting the bet on, I didn't always put the bet on, you know.
Well, Charlie,
why doesn't that surprise me?
You're not surprising us, Chaz. You had a little fund. No wonder you were going to the Bahamas every other week. Jesus.
Oh, great stuff. Great start. Well, I suppose while we're gloating over last weekend's ACCA winning, we should probably get our choices up for this weekend. So I'm going to start with you, Tomo. You were the last to pick out of us three this week. I know that's what your excuse is going to be. So go on. Tell us who you picked.
Tis, I'm awful sorry, but guys, I am going for a bit of value. You left me with very little, and I was looking through it, and I thought there was a few tough games, and I just thought, looking at Saints' result against Manchester United away from home, I'm looking, and at the Newcastle game, they had a few good chances. If Callum Wilson had scored early on against Villa, it could have been different. And so they are creating chances. I think they're going to beat your lot. My choice this week is Newcastle. Sorry, pal.
Well, it's not a huge surprise because our record at St James's Park in recent years has been pretty dire, if I'm honest. There's no surprise there. In the history of the fixture, I can understand why you've gone for that. So first choice for Tomo is Newcastle. Chaz, who have you gone for in our ACCA for next week?
Well, I'm looking for a return to form for a pretty disappointing result for Leicester at West Ham. But they were West Ham, we'll talk about them maybe later, team of the week. But I'm going to go for Leicester to bounce back. Norwich, a bit like my lot, Arsenal, still to score a goal. I think they'll open up a bit, Tiz, at home, because they've got to go after games now. And I think they always did that in the past anyway, under Farker. And I think nothing will change here. But I expect Leicester to be back in the groove. And I'm going for, I think, relatively decent value, Leicester away at Norwich.
Yeah, I think they're around even money, something like that. Seems pretty decent odds to me. I'm much more in favour of that choice than I am Tomo's, if I'm honest.
So come on, Tiz. Come on, let's see what you've got.
To make up the trio, one of the teams that was good to us last week, with a little 2-0 home win over Newcastle. And I am going for Aston Villa again in our ACCA this week to back up that win with a home win over Brentford. Now, I know Brentford haven't conceded a goal yet this season, but it's about time. And they haven't faced Danny Ings. Was that up for goal of the week last week or what? Chaz, you must have been impressed with that goal.
How he adapt his body to get in that position. As we know, a lot of players try that, but sky at 50, 100 yards, sky high. He was so in control, so beautifully delivered and executed, and it was. And I think Looking at this game, I think this is a tight game again, Tiz, but what a signing he could prove to be. Yous have certainly let one go for a very good piece of value.
Oh, it was rubbish defending, lads. That's what you... Seriously, boys, it was a proper laces finish. Not like Rooney's shinner, Man United against Man City. This was proper laces, caught absolutely perfect. And the way his position, the way he moved away from the defender to obviously give him, hopefully it comes within his area. But the actual execution of it was different. And there was some great goals, by the way, last weekend. But I think that topped it off. Proper goal.
Absolutely. I thought it was a stunning bit of centre-forward play. As you say, Tom, just to make that little bit of space. And the agility he showed was, yeah.
That must be decent value, this treble again, Tiz.
I think it should be decent value again, Chaz. Yeah, I mean they're fairly fairly decent prices, either around even money or a bit better. So yeah, we're hopefully we'll be on a back-to-back winners.
Well, mine is 6-4, so you know I will prop up you lads. Don't worry, I'll give you some money to spend.
That'll help your knees, won't it?
It'll pay for me other new knee, me third
exactly.
One.
Exactly. So, Chaz, you mentioned briefly just there West Ham and how good they were Monday night football. The first red card of the season came in that game. I'm going to go to a defender for this. Tomo, what did you make of that? Do you think the referee was absolutely right? And if he was, why didn't he see it in real time?
That was my little worry, Tiz, is that why our top official, Michael Oliver, didn't see it in real time? Because it was reckless, dangerous, everything that you want to put to it, that was it. It endangered a player's career because he's angry because he's got clipped. That's no excuses for him. That's what I think some of the Leicester, and he should have blown for the foul before it. Doesn't matter. I thought the way he went in there and how he didn't do any more damage, I just cannot. But I thought he got it spot on. Yes, he went over. He got the right decision in the end. But the worrying thing was he didn't see that in real time.
Yeah, that was a danger to it because it was reckless. And he knew he was out of control. But, you know, they say they protect themselves, but you never do. And this old cliche that they had, that strikers challenge, that's nonsense. That he went into to harm and it was a correct decision. But touching on West Ham, Antonio, I mean, what about the turnaround for this guy becoming a proper number nine? I know just before David Moyes, you had West Ham fans who didn't want David Moyes back. They weren't sure about the style of play. And I don't know, guys, but it looks as if he's gradually bringing this the way that he did Everton, just slowly, little step by step, he improves it. He gets the organisation and the shape at the back good. He gets power and pace up front. The turnaround to Antonio, I mean, Tiz, he's two goals. He's touch and turn is just normal number nine. The second goal for the touch and already on a half turn makes him a natural number nine. He's really, really turned into a class act. Now the record goal scorer in the Premier League.
Well, but Charlie, but West Ham will hope that David Moyes does a little bit better than Everton because Everton didn't win anything with him. So they got to the top four, Tomo, didn't they?
I mean, he got them to the top four. I know they never went through, but that's where he's heading. That's similar standard. And that's what I'm saying. That I just think it's remarkable what Moyes is doing at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. Remember on one of the Sky games, I don't know which one of us may have done it, remember when Antonio, they put him at right back, and it wasn't right wing back, it was right back. And to quote Mears, it's like a fish up a tree. Didn't want to be there. And he looked absolutely so out of it. And it was, why you put me here? I can't even sort of play wing back, which is a more offensive position. He was right back, for goodness sake. And he didn't have a clue with the surroundings. And I thought, this boy could be wanting out of here, and now you look at him, demanded the number nine shirt, tells it that he's got so much confidence. And his interview was one of the best interviews. None of this normal cliche, we'll go on to the next game and we'll do that. What a sensational interview by the young man.
Absolutely. What a character he is. And the belief that he's shown there, to take that number nine shirt, and to go, right, this is my position now. I'm the first choice number nine here, and I'm going to believe in myself enough to think that I can win the Golden Boot this season. although I've got to say, I'm sure he got the wrong film. I'm sure he was thinking of Dirty Dancing with Baby in the lift above the head.
That's what I thought it was.
He got that wrong, didn't he?
But you can forgive him of that, because what an infectious character it must be. To have that in the change room must be brilliant for those West Ham players.
Yeah, I think it makes David Moyes' job even easier when you've got a spirited camp like that, because if you remember the troubles that they had, Sam Allardyce and the managers before him, it just never seemed to gel. Moyes had a little trial run at it, and now it feels as if these characters are coming together. And you can tell, Tiz, by the celebrations of the group, can't you? You can see the whole group was just thrilled for them. But yeah, it was absolute. I just love the way they're going. They just keep going at it.
It's nice to see Ben Rama making a claim now for a spot. You know, he gets his goal, but he looks as though he's now, the way I see him is now, he's more accepted within the team, or do they normally say the group? And you see him coming into it on that left-hand side, and they're making a difference. You see Declan Rice giving a ball, making sort of, it was an underlap, wasn't it? It wasn't an overlap. There's so much confidence screaming through this West Ham side. How long they can keep it going is another thing, but they're certainly going to make a dent this season.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on, Tom. A very good last season, and you're right. Ben Rama had a tough time last year. A lot of minutes on the pitch with very little to show for it, but started brilliantly this season. So we mentioned the VAR doing its job properly there, and our top referee, Michael Oliver, getting the decision right eventually, Tomo. What about the VAR at St Mary's for the Southampton opening goal? Do you think it was a foul on Bruno Fernandes?
Lads, and I know maybe you go on amateur, I think it's a foul. And you dare say anything different, Letizia? Of course it's a foul.
How is it a foul?
He takes the man first. He literally barges the man and takes the ball.
Shoulder to shoulder, Tomo.
From the back.
He's on the side.
Let's have a look at your back.
He was strong. He got his leg across. He took the ball and he barged Fernandes out of the way. Fernandes needs to get on the weights. I'm with Alan Shearer and Ian Wright on Match of the Day, who said no foul. Absolutely right. Stevens gets the ball. He shows a bit of strength. Absolutely spot on referee, in my opinion, and correct to allow the goal. Charlie,
why are you saying that with a smile on your face?
Oh, come on, Tom. Would you just defend us now? Okay. You just want away with everything, don't you? You want away with a lot. You think, but modern day, everybody, exactly. All the diving that we get from Madison and Grealish and these type of players, and Fernandes is in the same bracket. If you touch him, he wants to go down. And I thought it was rather soft.
Charlie, I can agree with that. And he does go down a little bit too easy. And that's my first thought. But to me, that's a foul all day long. If that's against your team, if it's against Arsenal, if it was against Southampton, you'd all be going, oh, that's a foul. That's a foul against our team. We never get a decision.
I wouldn't.
You're still smiling, Tiz. So your smile on your face tells me you know you got away with one.
I'll give you my honest opinion, and it doesn't matter what colour the shirts the teams are wearing. I'll give you my honest opinion on an incident, and I didn't think that was a foul.
Were you sitting there? Were you sitting in the ground with your ambassadorial blazer on?
No, Charlie. I was sat in a studio in Hammersmith covering the game for Mola TV in Indonesia. Okay. Funny enough.
Wow, Tiz. How's your Molanese then, Tiz?
My Indonesian is a little bit rusty, so we do luckily have a translator in the studio.
Wow, they must have so many Southampton fans out there.
Ah, you're not wrong. There will be after Sunday's game, that's for sure.
No, but so when did you come out from behind the couch watching it in the studios, Tiz? Because you were worried last week.
I was worried last week because of the way that United, you know, steamrolled Leeds and the way that we weren't particularly good in the second half at Everton. So, yeah, I was very concerned.
But you just played well.
However, yeah, I think I noticed a slight difference in the way that Southampton set up. which I found quite encouraging, because I've always felt like over the last couple of years, we've gone so harum scarum right from the first whistle to try and get the lead in a game, to try and win the game by half time. And then when we come out for the second half, we're so flat and the energy's all gone and teams have been walking over us in the second half. And I wanted to see a different approach, because I don't think it was working what he was doing. And I saw that on Sunday. I think there was a much more relaxed, although they did press at times, I felt like they were conserving a little bit of energy in that first half as well. And when United scored to go 1-1, I think a lot of people were expecting the onslaught and this will end up 3-4-1. But I have to say, Southampton looked far more energetic and looked stronger than they ever did last season after conceding the goal. And Adam Armstrong had a couple of very good chances to win that game.
Yeah, I thought he was quite shrewd, the manager. I thought he looked as if he was aware of the situation without going mad about it. Just sit, be patient. And patience does sometimes get you somewhere. And they didn't panic when it went 1-1. Because if I'm being honest, I expected the onslaught to come. I thought it was going to happen. And it was just click of the finger and they would score. But I thought the Saints dug in well, Tiz.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I was very pleased with the point. I thought we were going to be going into this weekend's games with 0 points on the board. All of us.
All right. Move on.
Tiz. Tiz, have you got your script in front of your camera there?
No.
You should put a boxing glove on when you're changing it.
Script? I'm a maverick. I don't need a script. I play off the cuff, Tomo. Just a few little reminders of what happened at the weekend. I'm getting old. So we're talking about refereeing incidents, and we're going to go to Ellen Road for the penalty incident up there. And I'll go to Charlie because we don't get a decent answer from Tomo, given that Everton were involved. Charlie.
It's outrageous.
Calvert-Lewin. Penalty or not?
Well, he played for it, but he got it. And I thought it was a penalty, yeah. I think when you're looking at people, you know, I think Tiz, Tomo's always been a great believer as being a defender, to not dive in, to jockey people. He's been saying it for year after year after year. And then you get people who become rash or make the wrong decision at the wrong time. You don't always need to be touched or, you know, hurt in a challenge for a striker to be aware that what's coming in round about him. How many times do we see them just toe-poke it before they get to the keeper? They're already halfway down, but they get the penalty. It's a modern way.
Dele Alli.
I just thought the striker was aware that what was coming his way, and he thought, I'll have a slice of this action, thanks very much. And I thought he earned it. I thought he knew exactly what was going on. And it was, as sometimes the foreigners would say, it was clever play.
Charlie, listen, Tiz, I'll tell you exactly what's gone on. The defender is panicked. The defender is completely the wrong side of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's got, and he's panicked, and he's thought he's going to get the ball here in a favourable position, and he's grabbed all of them. And I agree here is that Dominic Calvert-Lewin is standing and holding his ground because he knows he's got the fella behind him. I thought it was a penalty all day long, honestly. And I'm going to shock you even more. I'm going to shock you even more. The penalty that Leeds were claiming, I don't think that was a penalty either.
Blimey!
I know.
Wow!
I've had a bad scouseland.
Where's me paracetamol? I need...
Tomo, what else did that surgeon do to you while you were under anaesthetic?
He must have bumped into a wrapper at the shops.
I'm sorry. I was hoping that we weren't going to go there, by the way, lads. So I've got that out of the way quickly.
Well, can I just say thank you very much for that honest appraisal, Tomo. It is very unusual.
Very unusual.
That is unusual, because I've gone with Everton. I've gone with Manchester United. I have had a bad weekend.
So on the subject of penalties, and Charlie just touched upon it there a little bit, the Dele Alli incident at Wolves, which led to the Spurs penalty. Talk me through that one, Chaz. Is that one of those cases where you think the player was on his way down before any contact was made?
Absolutely. I think they actually must now practice it in training. I really do, because it's becoming such a natural thing to do. I mean, you remember, like, even some of the coaches would say, it's so unfair how they do this. And I think a lot of the coaches now are admiring their own players who would do this at training. Just touch the ball. Because we say you don't need contact as long as they think there's, you know, he's made you go down or he's involved in making you go down, like the tugging of the shirt. But of course, I mean, Dele Alli has been another one. The younger players in the game seem to have learnt this and don't look back in it the way we used to say maybe there's a bit of cheating involved in that. And you would go, oh, that's quite harsh to call them cheats. But they work in it because for years now people have been telling them, no, this is clever. If this happened to the opposition, you would be going mad about it. But of course it is, Tiz. It's one of them, a guy who's been struggling for 18 months. He's back in the team. He's trying to keep himself in the team. And I can understand wholeheartedly why now it's in their mentality to do that.
It's a Jamie Vardy syndrome. You leave that leg in there and it's either clever or it's cheating, whichever way, there's a little bit in between all that. How they do it at full speed is beyond me. Because Dele Alli does leave his leg. I think it's a clear penalty. I'm not trying to say it's not. But he still leaves his leg in there and drags that leg. Jamie Vardy throws the leg across him and into players. He is so clever how he does it at full speed.
You never had the speed to try and do that, Tiz, did you?
There might have been a couple of occasions where I dragged Charlie my leg Nicholas. Behind me just to make sure there was contact.
Pot, Charlie Nicholas, pot and kettle comes to mind here, by the way.
No, I used to go down like, they used to shout timber before I went down.
Okay, I just want to go back briefly. I know, Charlie, you probably don't want to, but I want to go back to the Arsenal game. But you'll be surprised because it's actually for a positive point. I have to say, I thought Bernd Leno's save from Romelu Lukaku's point-blank header was the save of the season already.
It was absolutely amazing because if you look back in the shot and Lukaku doesn't see, he just knows he's got his header in target and he knows he's got across the defender yet again. And he obviously thinks it's in the back of the net. I mean, he turns around, he's looking at his mates and he's going, did he save it? Did I miss it? Because he was trying to work out and he's going, did he save it? No, his mates are going, no, he saved it. And he's went, how did he save that? It was quite remarkable because he probably deserved the second goal in truth because he was just explosive. But the thing, this is the thing, we Arsenal, we now are in debate whether they sold Martinez for the wrong reasons and they kept Leno for the wrong reasons. Leno is a very good goalkeeper, but let's be honest, all top-class goalkeepers at this level now, reaction saves, I've all got it. But it was a stunning save. But it, Tiz, don't bluff me. Don't try and kid me on. It was not a positive.
Have you got a rant for us this week?
I tell you what, though, Chaz, they spent some money this week. What do you make of the two new signings in Ramsdale and Odegaard?
Odegaard, I think, is a talented boy. But I think we're going back to Ozil days. I don't think... The problem overall here is I generally don't know what Arsenal are classed as now as a team. Are they just a tippy-tappy, nice-to-watch team? Because people say, I think you'd all agree, they were bullied by Brentford and they were bullied by Lukaku in particular. Arsenal have been getting bullied for 7-8 years. They're a soft touch and they've been a soft touch. So the bullying thing has been there anyway. The signings, I think, is putting more pressure on Arteta because it sounds as if Arteta has wanted these two in. I don't quite know whether it makes a difference or makes Arsenal stronger because Arsenal's defensive frailties are still evident and the centre midfield players are evident until Partey comes back in. But Arsenal must, first of all, find an identity, guys. They find an identity of what? Are they a pressing team? Are they a team that's in? Are they a team that's organised and shaped well for the counter-attack? Then, okay, but they have no identity anymore, so I don't think there's great relevance in these two signings, if I'm being honest. So stop trying to give me positives when there's none!
Sorry, Chaz. Well, after that rant, I think this is a very good time to take give Charlie a breather and we'll take a little break and we'll come back in the second half of Where's Jeff and have a look at the weekend's fixtures coming up.
Right, guys, welcome back to Where's Jeff podcast. Guys, we've got massive game up here in Glasgow. Tomo, your old pal, Stevie Gerrard, champions at Rangers and Celtic, go to Ibrox, full capacity of 50,000 plus. And would you believe it, Celtic allowed no away fans whatsoever. How would the both of you like to play in that cauldron?
Do you know what? I've always thought, and I have actually had an offer from Stephen Gerrard to go to an Old Firm game, and I must take it up. I think it would be quite extraordinary. I watch it all the time on the television, and it is one of the great atmospheres, not just in British football, in world football. And I do. I can pay them a compliment up there. They're so passionate. It's incredible. Yes, sometimes it can go overboard, but it is so nerve-jangling. I just think it's great. And this one, Charlie, Celtic are coming in, probably feeling a bit like favourites. They've had a good few wins, scoring a few goals. The new coach seems to be doing something right. But come on, the Rangers! Nah, I'm only winding you up.
I know you are. I know you've probably never been to one either, but this is the type of scenario where I think you would love to go 50,000 screaming and bawling against you and wanting on that ball.
Yeah, it's still on my bucket list, Chaz. It's a game that I want to get to. Your pal John has invited me up, actually, and I must take him up on that offer. But I've watched a load of them on the TV, and the atmosphere when there is both the sets of fans in there is quite incredible. But I remember going to play at Newcastle back in the early 90s, and we'd only had, I think they were doing some work on the stadium at the time, so we weren't allowed any away fans. So the only away fans we had were the players' complimentaries, which was about six people. It's a long way to Newcastle from Southampton. So I had that experience of playing in a stadium where we literally had nobody that had our backs. Fortunately for us, we did end up winning 2-1. And you're right, I did enjoy it. And I scored the winner from a free kick. And it was quite eerie because normally, obviously, when you score a goal, Tomo wouldn't know about that. But when you scored a goal and the ecstasy of the roar from the fans. But to score a goal in a stadium with that many people in, And to hear a pin drop. I mean, I could hear, from where I'd taken the free kick from, I could hear our bench celebrating. That's how quiet the stadium was. I remember it like it was yesterday. Honestly, it was unbelievable. And it's just the weirdest feeling, but a very satisfying one to actually shut up a whole stadium was quite nice.
But Charlie, don't you think that is the glory of the Old Firm game? It doesn't matter how many fans, whether it's a few hundred or a couple of thousand, that's what makes it. And I know it's become a tit for tat. Well, we're not allowing any, so Rangers don't have, Celtic don't have any away fans, but that's been part of the atmospheric atmosphere that brings this game alive to everybody. It's not just because it's a home game. And I just think it'll make it a lesser spectacle by not having away fans in.
No, you're definitely bang on, guys. This did happen before, and Celtic got a 1-1 draw when it happened the last time. But Celtic are much improved. They've won 5 in the spin, looking good at home, scoring lots of goals. And you should remember Joe Hart. Joe Hart's up there now, and he looks as if his experience might help Celtic. I think some of them can be dull. And some of them can be, they'll always be great drama. But this is one of the four questions we've fired in for the podcast. I've actually tipped up a 2-2 scoreline. I can see loads of goals in this. But I think it's going to be a classic. It's a must-watch scenario this weekend. It'll be an absolute classic for me. Going on to another one, guys. We got a few questions in. And there was obviously one. We touched on Southampton, so we can bypass that one. But there's one here and I could have had a rant again about Arteta. But it's a quite interesting one. It's just come in. We always mention my little mate, but do we feel betrayed by Jeff for the soccer Saturday time? Which I think is quite a strange question.
Go on, Tiz.
I mean, that's something that I've seen on social media before, asked of Jeff, and why didn't he walk with his mates, and do we feel bad for it, or you know, are we angry at him? But listen, everybody has to make their own decisions in life. Nobody knows what everybody's circumstances are. And so I don't personally, I don't hold any grudges against Jeff whatsoever. He was in that job and doing that job a long time before any of us came along. Or actually, probably not Charlie, actually, because you were there donkeys years ago, Chad.
No, Thomas was first then. Thomas was first then.
Oh, okay.
I was in 1992 when it started. Soccer Saturday started in 94, 95. So I had a few years before I went to Liverpool with the great Rodney, the great Frank, George Best, Clive Allen. That was our five, and we had a weekend off. It was wonderful. Better than you lot, by the way. It was, had some proper pundits then. No, but you're quite right, Tiz. It's everybody used to their own thing. Hold no grudges, nothing with Jeff. Jeff is the best presenter by a million miles. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast, but he is the best presenter, sports presenter by an absolute million miles. Top class. And Mace is all right as well.
There was, just before we go into Tiz to take us into the weekend fixtures. Yeah, I'm the same, guys. I mean, look, Jeff was absolutely brilliant with us all. Jeff led the show. It was his show for a long time. And we just made it into a kind of dressing room banter. And he thrived on it. And he actually picked up on it. But there's no betrayal. There's nothing. Everybody must continue. And he's still trying his very best. Whether he's enjoying it as much, as only he can tell us. But that he was a maestro at that show. And we were all part of a significant playing of it. And we enjoyed it, so there's no personal agenda against Jeff. He is still the best, in my opinion.
Yep. Charlie, I think at this point we should give Jeff's walk. Jeff's walking for prostate cancer again next week. So, you know, everybody's got to rally round. It's a fantastic charity. Jeff does it all the time, these marathons. How he does it, I don't know, with those short legs of his. But he is an absolute... He is...
Do you know he starts off at 6 foot six and ends up 5 foot two?
But he has, and he's raised... He's not just raised money, he's raised awareness. And I think it's tremendous. I'll be there on Merseyside. I know you're doing Yorkshire, Charlie, but it's fantastic.
The genius of it all is the people you meet on the walk and the stories they've got to tell. And that's all just part of it. But what Jeff has done in cancer is amazing. And that's why we're all involved and that's why we love doing it. Weekend fixtures, Tiz?
Well, Charlie, you're going to be delighted. Obviously, the first game of the weekend, Saturday lunchtime. Your boy's going to Man City. Do you... let me ask it this way. Are you as worried about this fixture as I was about Saints versus Man United on Sunday? And could you see a similar outcome?
No, I'm not that worried. You look worried. I don't feel that worried. I'm sweating already.
The problem we get here is, I think we all touched on Man City last week, didn't we? We thought they'd won 4 or 5. And I'm just scared we take a real hiding. That's the problem I face. Where do we pitch ourselves? I would imagine he's going to play one up front and probably flood the midfield. But Arsenal don't know how to park the bus, and this is the issue. We could be half decent in a counter attack because I don't know who the fullbacks will be this weekend, but if it's Mendy, I think you could have a go at Mendy. But I am quite strong on this, and I'll be speaking to Arsenal supporters this week actually on their own agendas to really feel the anger or the frustration that's coming through this Friday. But no, I'm not hopeful. I'm expecting Man City to win by a couple of goals.
Okay, so I'm going to ask Charlie one more point. Charlie, if you could accept right at this minute a 2-0 defeat on Saturday lunchtime, would you take it?
I would accept that right now, which is unbelievable that I have to think that way.
Yeah, that's quite scary. What do you think,
isn't
Tom?
Charlie, listen, I know Arsenal are not the best defensively.
Don't you wind me up anymore, you.
Now, I honestly think you just... 4 out of those 5 goals were all scored in a similar fashion last week, by players running from outside to inside, inside forward, and Norwich got caught every time. Surely Arteta needs to do just a little bit of work. Everybody has to be more aware. If you can close down now, that has always been that thing about Manchester City, those little diagonal balls into the space, and nobody seemed to be aware of it from Norwich. So I think if Arsenal do, everybody's aware of the job, that as Tiz said, they changed the way they played a little bit, had a good shape about them defensively, I think 2-0's a good result for you.
It is quite sad, really, that as an Arsenal supporter, you would, in a fixture like that, you would readily accept a defeat by 2 goals before the ball is even kicked. I mean, that just sums up just how far the mighty have fallen for me. But we won't dwell on that, Charlie, because I know that...
Move on, then!
Okay, we've got a whole raft of 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday, and all three of our accumulator choices are kicking off at 3 o'clock. The first one, me and my choice, Aston Villa against Brentford. And I know that the Brentford have started the season pretty well without conceding a goal, but couldn't break through against Crystal Palace and didn't really create that many chances. Do you see Brentford having any chance in this one at all, Tomo?
Yeah, I do, Tiz. In these sort of games, you've got to always... You can't write them off. I do go with the boys. I do think this would probably just be a home win. But there's been enough in Brentford's play where you go, they're half decent. And it's only up front. I think you've always got a chance. I think there was a corner kick that came in last weekend. Oh, my goodness. He rose above so many players. And defensive players like Benteke was in there. He must have been 2 foot above everybody. Really should have scored. But the guy looks as though he's got goals in him. I think they can cause teams a problem. I do with you guys, just fancy Villa that little bit more.
I'm tempted just to go. I don't know if Ollie Watkins is fit yet, but I think he could be looking at his old club if he is and fancying his chances. What I do like about Brentford, though, guys, is they went with a back four. Ayer, who they signed from Celtic in the summer, can play right back, but then he went a back three away from home. So he's very adaptable, but I think you're right, Tiz, the one you touch on, if they went with the back three, do they have the potency up front to supply the bullets for Tony? If they do, then there's a chance, but Villa, with that win last week, probably just edge it.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. I that's obviously my choice in the ACCA, so I'm going with Villa. I think a good game is due at the Amex down at Brighton, where Everton are the visitors. Two teams that have had very good starts to the season. Should be a decent game, this one, Chas.
Yeah, as I say, I like Brighton. I like what Potter does and like assistant Billy Reid. And they have a purpose that when you look at that, I mean, Shane Duffy has had an absolute shocker at Celtic. I think he played about 3 games and he could not even get in the squad some weekends. Now, I know Celtic were awful last season, but it wasn't just him. And all of a sudden, he's backed a couple of goals. He had a man-of-match appearance and they've got physical presence at the back and good at set pieces. We know that. But they still like to play. And there's a lot of good things about Brighton. But Rafa does like a little technical switch here and there, doesn't he? He likes a tactical move. He's got pace up front. They're good in the counter-attack. I can't separate these. I think it's another score draw with Everton.
I agree, Charlie. I think these are quite well matched. You know, Everton last week beat a difficult one at Leeds because Leeds had had a thumping at Old Trafford and they wanted to sort of make a play. I thought it was a good game, by the way, Leeds versus Everton. And they do have this way of playing them. Rafa likes to be organised and then counter from that, especially in his early days with this Everton side. But Brighton are so good. We spoke about it. They just don't score enough goals. But I think they will at least get on the score sheet. Now, I'm with you on this one, Charlie. I can't split them, but I think there will be goals. Score draw. Cheers.
Yeah, I'd probably be very similar to that. I think score draw is a pretty good prediction. I think both teams have had decent starts to the season. Both got goals in them by the looks of it. You know, both creating chances. And look like scoring in every game. So, yeah, I'm happy with a score draw in that one as well. That takes us on to my boys up at Newcastle. I mentioned that our record up there isn't particularly good. But Newcastle have not had a particularly great start to the season. Charlie, do you give my boys any chance? Obviously, Tomo doesn't because he's come from Newcastle and Yakka. But do you give my boys a chance up here, Chas?
I do, Tiz. I really do. I think...
Oh, looking how at... I do, Tiz. Well,
the thing is with Newcastle, you know what like it is. Are the crowd going to really get behind the team? Is Maximum going to start? And if he does start, are they going to get enough of the ball to him? And the thing that I can see a score draw in this, Tomo, I really do think that there's a lot of pressure again going to be applied on the home side. But with Southampton, it was the 1-1. When it went 1-1, the reaction, that I don't think they'll change much. They'll keep playing and passing and just be patient enough. And the frustration through the crowd can come in the last 20, 25 minutes. I'm going score draw on this one, 1-1 for me.
Well, Tiz, it's not all doom and gloom because I can't see it being tight, so there's only going to be a goal in it. And I do see a 1-0 or a 2-1 to Newcastle. I just felt last week they do create chances. And it's another one of those. They have to be ready to take them. And I think Callum Wilson, they've got more of a goal scorer in them than what the Saints have, Tiz. And I just think him and Sam Maximan, if he's on it, and normally at home, he really produces the goods. And I'm expecting him to turn up as well. I do think that they will just pip you, Tiz, I'm sorry to say.
No, I have to say, Sam Maximan concerns me. I think he has the ability to win a game on his own. I mean, the assist that he turned Declan Rice inside out in the first weekend of the season, I thought was just incredible. And yeah, I'm a bit concerned about him, but still going to be a away win anyway, so move on. We haven't got time to do every fixture, but the 5:30 fixture on the Saturday is quite a interesting fixture. Liverpool against Chelsea, the fixture of the weekend for me. And Chelsea started the season superbly, Tomo. Do you see this as a comfortable Liverpool victory, or do you think Chelsea will take something from your boys?
No, I do think Chelsea played very well at Anfield towards the end of last season, and that culminated in us as part of those six home games that we lost. I think this is a far better Liverpool team. We have played two games, still in second gear, still got a lot to do, and so are Chelsea. Because I think they were only in second gear beaten Arsenal last week. Against Palace, they just rolled Palace over. So it is a really interesting game. Two title hopefuls, and I just think with home advantage, the atmosphere against Burnley last week at Anfield was, the start of the game was nothing short of sensational. And I think it was like that at all grounds to have fans back in. I think with this being at Anfield, is just going to tip this in our favour, I really do. And I'm going for a 1-0 or a 2-1 scoreline.
Jazz, what do you reckon?
Well, I think the signing of Lukaku has turned him into title challengers. I originally went for him as fourth. And I've never seen Lukaku look so trim and fit and sharp for the start of the season. He looked to be...
And hungry.
Yeah. Well, I think the Euros proved something about Lukaku. He suddenly realised that he's got such powers that if he plays in the right team, the right system, he knows he's going to be a top player. And I think that's why he came back. So I think it really does flip Chelsea into be serious challengers now rather than on the fringe. I really do. I still like to look in the sharpness of Liverpool. The slight question mark, Tom, I've got against your side is still... Midfield, can they control enough? Well, can they protect enough? Van Dijk back, Matip back, yeah, and the fullbacks. I don't know if Andy Robertson is fit, but lovely to see Andy getting a new contract. That's beautiful news for Liverpool and him.
Robbo was on the bench at the weekend, so I imagine he's had a good few training sessions now. I do expect him to play. I would expect Fabinho, if everything is all right with him, to come back in to give it a bit more solidity. Harvey Elliott, who had an outstanding game last week, might just make way for a bit more experience. So I think even Thiago and Henderson and Fabinho, if all is right, you can see maybe that is a good midfield three. But the bench on Chelsea is just quite frightening. And that's what makes them challenges, as you say. They have been very, very good. What do you think, Tiz?
I think the whole game... depends on who wins the battle between Lukaku and Van Dijk. I think it's as simple as that. That little duel between those two players. Whoever comes out on top in that, I think their team wins the game of football. That's as simple as I think it'll be next weekend.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a nice fair point, but I'll just to elaborate on that. Joel Matip has been even better than Van Dijk. He has been, the two games that we've had has been absolutely top class, and he'll look forward to it because he's a strong boy as well. But you're quite right, you're bang on, boys. Lukaku is making a big difference to this Chelsea side.
Absolutely. Now, we've got three games on the Sunday. I'm thinking that most people are expecting Spurs to beat Watford. You know, shout if you think anything different than that. The interesting one is perhaps Wolves against Manchester United, the 4:30 kickoff on the Sunday. United away at Wolves. Now, given perhaps how underwhelming maybe they were away from home at St Mary's on Sunday, do we think Wolves are capable of an upset in this? Have you seen enough from Wolves this season to think they could take something from United, Tomo?
Well, Wolves have still been in the two games that they've played, isn't it? 2-1-0 defeats, so you can say they're still in there. Jimenez maybe is still sort of a little bit rusty. Hopefully he has a really good season. But there's something missing from this. And it's not just now and these first few games. It was halfway through last season. They seemed to lose the way and the Wolves' way of how they did things. As you've seen last week, you know, Traore gets through, gets right involved. It's a massive... Well, it's a save in the end. It's still that. But I just think Manchester United will have too much for them. I do think they will still and always will create chances. I do expect Manchester United to win this.
Yeah, I'm going along with that one, Tez. I think Man United will be too strong here. Traore, we know, is so unpredictable and he can make great things. And I think he thrives in the big games. And I think he could be sold by the end of the next week, but the transfer closes anyway. But I don't think they've got enough potency up front now, and I really don't think that Neves and Moutinho in particular have the same influence in the team that they did have in the past under Nuno. So I think that's just drifting a little bit in the wing-back position for Wolves also. I think Manchester United will win this.
Interesting. I tell you what, obviously Wolves lost Rui Patricio. But I have to say, I thought Jose Sarr in the Wolves goal made some excellent saves against Spurs. That game could have been a comfortable win for Spurs, but I think their goalkeeper had a terrific game that day.
But then that's a worry, Tiz, isn't it? That's a worry when your goalkeeper is making those saves at home of where you are in the standing in the Premier League.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, so we've got, there was just a couple of other fixtures that I think we can do a quick prediction on before we leave this week's podcast. Burnley against Leeds. Anybody see a Burnley win there?
I do. I really am. I was looking at this for our Acker, by the way, boys. And I just think Burnley have had such a poor start. You know what Burnley are like. They're always ready to sort of turn something around at home. I just think... A Leeds side who like to go forward. And last week, I know what people... They can't cause trouble if they get that ball in the box. If you've got Barnes and Wood in there, you have to take advantage of them. And as we've seen against Everton, the ball coming into the box caused Leeds all sorts of problems. Set pieces, Leeds, Achilles heel. Who likes to make hay at these things? Burnley Football Club.
So when I said a brief prediction, Tomo, did you miss that bit?
Sorry, Tiz.
So I'm guessing we're all tipping Leicester to take all 3 points at Norwich, and probably all West Ham to take all three against Crystal Palace. Anyone disagree with that?
No, I think they look pretty good naps for the weekend.
Yeah, so just a reminder for all of you guys out there, our little treble acca that came in nicely last week. This week's choices are Aston Villa, Newcastle and Leicester, and let's see if we can double up. We'll be looking forward to speaking to you all next week on Where's Jeff? Boys, it's been an absolute pleasure again. Same time next week.
Where's Jeff? Good stuff, Jazz. Where's Jeff?
Good care, guys.
Where's Jeff?